welcome to Insight for Impact, the podcast from SQW featuring conversations with experts on the issues that matter in economic and social development.
Welcome to Insight for Impact. I'm Joe Duggett. Today, we're going to be discussing student-focused knowledge exchange in higher education and some of the particular challenges and issues faced by students from non-traditional or underrepresented groups in higher education and how this links to the broader widening participation agenda. To talk about this important issue, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues Jane Meagher and Izzy Hampton. Jane, welcome back to Insight for Impact.
Hi, Joe. Good to be back.
And Izzy, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here.
So to provide some context and background to our discussion, I mentioned the widening participation agenda, and this is a high profile, quite complicated and broad area with a range of different components. Now, this includes considering issues related to access to higher education for individuals from traditionally underrepresented social groups. And that's really core to widening participation and probably deserves a whole podcast or more actually in itself. Perhaps maybe less commonly considered when discussing wider participation is the important issue of actually supporting students from traditionally underrepresented groups during their time at university. So that is once they've accessed higher education, to support them to succeed in their studies, to exploit fully the opportunities that are afforded by higher education, and to develop their wider skills, confidence, and employability prospects, including through, for example, engaging in knowledge exchange activities. Now, this is an area that we've been working on recently across several projects at SQW and which we're going to focus on in the discussion today. This is particularly interesting, I think, when we start to also consider how this element of widening participation, that is enhancing participation in activities during higher education, relates to addressing issues of equality, diversity and inclusion, or EDI, in the higher education setting. Jane, can you say a bit more about the background here in terms of widening participation and how this can often overlap with a broader EDI agenda and the sets of issues and challenges that come with that?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, the groups who are typically defined as facing distinct barriers to higher education in widening participation strategies or policies are fairly broad. And they include students who might be first in their family to go to university or college, students who have been in care from particular ethnic groups, who are eligible for free school meals when they're at school, students with special educational needs, just name a few. And these are groups who tend to experience inequalities and barriers to inclusion more broadly than just at university or college. So there's definite overlap between the EDI agenda and the widening participation agenda. And as you said, Joe, these groups experience barriers to accessing higher education and also participating and progressing in HE as well. So there are well-documented attainment gaps at university or college, which affect subsequent life chances and can really limit opportunities for those from underrepresented groups once they leave higher education. And so seeking to reduce these gaps through removing some of the barriers that they might face is really important. It's worth stating that these underrepresented groups are diverse and they won't all experience the same barriers to access and participation. But there are fundamental barriers to participating in knowledge exchange activities, for example, or extracurricular activities. And this might include practical capacity barriers. So, for example, students needing to work part-time when they're in higher education or maybe having caring responsibilities. They can be physical access barriers. So, for example, people with disabilities not being able to access certain activities. And it can also be social barriers. So, for example, students feeling like certain activities might not be for them or not having experience in developing an application before and then not having the confidence or perceived skills to do so.
Thanks, Jane. That's a really helpful overview. So we've both talked about maximising opportunities for students when they're in higher education and knowledge exchange particularly. Izzy, can you say a bit more about the sort of activity we're talking about and what practically that looks like?
Yeah, of course. So it could be supporting in curricular participation, for example, through bursaries, or it could be supporting access to extracurricular activities or to knowledge exchange opportunities. So in terms of a definition, knowledge exchange is a process that brings together academic staff, users of research, and wider groups and communities to exchange ideas, evidence, and expertise. There are loads of different examples of knowledge exchange activities, including things like partnerships between universities and industry, which in relation to students can include work placements or schemes where students are asked to work on projects to help identify new market opportunities or consider responses to business challenges to provide them with experience of problem solving and teamwork in a professional environment. Industry-related curriculum development activities, where universities work with external organisations to design and then embed relevant real-world activities into teaching and learning. Targeted consultancy activities delivered by students to support local partners, including businesses, charities, or the public sector, to solve issues. And support for graduate startups, including, for example, enterprise challenges or competitions, and the provision of workspace and incubation support and advice. I can actually give you a couple of practical examples from a project I worked on recently for TASO, the Centre for Transforming Access and Student Outcomes in Higher Education. We were asked to evaluate two programmes designed to improve employability outcomes for university students from widening participation backgrounds. The first was a mentoring programme at the University of Brighton that matched students with trained volunteer professionals. The aims of the mentoring were to support students to stay at the university, achieve a good degree, and progress into employment or further study. There was one programme that was open to all students, and four that targeted specific groups of students, such as graduates or men training to be primary school teachers. The other programme we evaluated was the Access to Internship Scheme at the University of Exeter that provided funding for 140 hours of work and covered any other costs incurred by employers when they take on an intern. The scheme was principally about enabling a greater number of internships to take place, with the expectation being that internships lead to better outcomes for students.
Thanks, Izzy. That's a really useful overview and then practical examples of some of the projects and some of the activities that are taken forward by particular institutions. We, alongside the work that you just referred to, Izzy, on for TASO, the three of us recently worked on a project that supported a wide range of different types of student-focused knowledge exchange for the Office for Students. Jane, do you want to say a bit more about that programme that we just evaluated and how this ties back to the issues related to widening participation and EDI agendas that we were discussing earlier?
Yeah, of course. So this was the Student Engagement in Knowledge Exchange competition. The competition was run jointly by the Office for Students and Research England, and they funded 20 projects across HE institutions in England, which sought to demonstrate the benefits of engagement with knowledge exchange for HE students and graduates. The projects funded, as you've just talked about, Joe, were really diverse in what they were delivering. Some focus on scaling up existing projects focused on knowledge exchange, some trial brand new projects, and some delivered research and evaluation activity to explore the benefits of activities that they were delivering. In designing the competition, Office for Students and Research England recognised some of the barriers facing groups of students in engaging with knowledge exchange activities. So one of the priorities for the competition was for projects to address evidence issues of equality of opportunity, diversity and inclusion. And many of the projects focused explicitly on these issues, but other projects funded were a lot more implicit in their focus on EDI issues. So some projects felt that by improving access to knowledge exchange activities for all, this would improve access for those underrepresented groups as well. We also found that projects acted and adapted according to emerging evidence around barriers to engagement. So, for example, by adapting their recruitment activities during delivery to reach those specific groups.
This was a really interesting part of the evaluation, thinking about the extent to which the programme was addressing issues of EDI. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about actually how we went about doing that in the evaluation?
Yeah, so we actually looked at how projects sought to address issues of EDI in some detailed case studies with projects that we did. And these case studies really highlighted that different approaches work in different contexts. There's no single right approach. That said, an important finding was that aligning project, student and partner values, priorities, principles could be really effective in aiming to address issues of EDI in knowledge exchange. And this was a really important element of a case study that I looked at based at Edgehill University, who had a really strong relationship with their partner organisations. And this partnership was built on shared values around inclusivity and a real desire to engage as diverse a student cohort as possible. So this project was called Tackling the Blues, and competition funding was used to scale up their existing activity. So their existing activity was supporting students to work with schools in the local area to improve the mental health and well-being of young people through sport. And the competition enabled them to transfer the model to deliver the project through art as well as sport. And one thing Edgehill did to widen their reach and inclusivity was to target their recruitment activities at groups of students that they struggled to engage in the project typically, to try to break down some of those barriers. So groups included men from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who might have been first generation students who can be exposed growing up to a lot of stigma around mental health. So they did a lot of recruitment around International Men's Day, for example, and getting in speakers who these students would relate to. And they also gave marketing and recruitment responsibilities to existing student participants. And this actually opened up doors with the university's LGBTQ plus community through using the students' own networks. Edgehill also delivered really flexible models once students were on the course. So for example, if a student had caring responsibilities and couldn't commit to a full 12-week project in schools, they could just dip into one-off delivery days or attend training events or go and see speakers. So the project really tried to ensure any student could participate as far as possible. And then there's just one final point I wanted to make on Edgehill's project, which was that they tried to set up their students with broader skills that would build their social capital post-project through making the whole process as real world as possible. And this was through things like requiring a written application, an interview to get onto the program, getting students to manage their time, claim expenses and things like that. But this was all done in a really supportive way.
Thanks, Jane. Those are really interesting insights. I conducted interviews with people involved in the Students at the Heart of Knowledge Exchange project at Angela Ruskin University. The project engaged students in a number of different knowledge exchange activities, including Student Consult, a four-week programme where students set out to solve real-world problems experienced by local county councils. For context, Angela Ruskin has a very diverse student population. It has the second highest number of care leavers out of all higher education institutions in England, and a notable proportion of students have jobs and caring responsibilities. The people I spoke to explained that students with busy and complex lives can find it difficult to maintain engagement in extracurricular activities, and therefore high dropout rates was a real challenge. To address this, Angela Ruskin took a similar flexible approach to Edgehill. No element of the project was mandatory, so students were encouraged but not required to attend onboarding training. And if a student had to leave a session early for any reason, the delivery team made it clear that this would not impact on their ability to participate in future activities. The project also adopted a no-foul approach, whereby if a student withdrew from the project, it was not the end of the road. Instead, the delivery team took it on good faith that the student had a valid reason for dropping out and allowed them to rejoin the project at a later point if they wanted to. The delivery team also recorded events so that students who were unable to attend due to work or childcare commitments could catch up at a later date. All of these approaches proved to be really effective at reducing dropout rates.
Thanks, Izzy and Jane, for the previous example. I think it's really interesting to hear that the practical cases, and it reminds me of one of the projects that I looked at as a case study, and that point around flexibility and the recognition of other potential call on students' time in the project at University of Greenwich called GreeHacks. And this was a project, as the name would suggest, that delivered a series of 2-day student hacks, which are short programmes where students came together to solve problems which had been identified by partner organisations from the private sector and from the local volunteering community sector. And core to this project was that point around addressing barriers of engagement in these sorts of activities. So explicitly focused on having a short period, i.e. a two-day program, that would enable individuals to generate valuable experience and skills and to do that in a short and focused and discrete period of time. While participation in the hacks was open to all students, there were particular priority groups were established, so Black and minority ethnic students, students with caring responsibilities, and disabled students. And one of the ways in which the project sought to access students from these groups was to engage with relevant societies and networks to help promote the project, including social media channels and the use of multiple engagement and promotion mechanisms. And I think the research indicated that using a mix of communication channels is really important to attract and maintain a diverse range of students in these sorts of activities. You also mentioned, Jane, the point around sort of demonstrating a commitment to EDI through the engagement of diverse communities in the project and in partners, and the sort of activity that was delivered in order to align the student perspective with the organisations that are participating in the activity. And in this case at Greenwich, several of the hacks had a particular focus on addressing issues that considered EDI, and that was seen as important in attracting target groups and also wider study cohorts and retaining individuals in the process. As we come to the close of our discussion, can I ask each of you, Jane, Izzy, to provide what you think is your key takeaway?
I think the main takeaway for me is that there's no off-the-shelf approach to this. Firstly, because underrepresented groups aren't all the same. The group is made up of individuals who experience very different barriers, and therefore different approaches are needed. But also, well, certainly on the student engagement and knowledge exchange evaluation, we saw so many diverse approaches to delivery, which were all still successful in engaging students and achieving outcomes. Although there are definitely underlying principles that make this work, which we explore further in our report. And these can include involving students in designing programmes that really work for them and meet their needs, or providing opportunities for knowledge exchange to occur in real-world contexts, like some of the examples we talked about did.
Thanks, Jane. Izzy, your key takeaway?
I think the main takeaway for me is to be open in terms of student engagement. Being flexible with regards to participation can accommodate students who might not be able to attend every activity, and having a no-foul approach can reduce dropout rates and ensure that more students from widening participation backgrounds can benefit from knowledge exchange.
So I think those are really good points. I completely agree with both of them. The thing that struck me actually on our work evaluating the student engagement in knowledge exchange competition was the enthusiasm, the commitment, the passion of the people that are working in this space, both delivering the projects and also the students that were involved, and how they're able to adapt to different conditions, different issues. And there's a really strong sense of community, I think, across the institutions that were supported and were wanting to learn about what works well and also what works less well.
This definitely came through strongly in the evaluation. And just to contextualise this, the beginning of the competition coincided with the COVID-19 pandemic. And this enthusiasm and commitment that you've just talked about, Joe, really aided the projects in pivoting and adapting delivery in a way that still supported students, including those from underrepresented groups, to engage with knowledge exchange activities.
Yeah, that's a good point. The context was very challenging. And I think that actually also highlights for me that it's a really important area, this, in terms of supporting student engagement in knowledge exchange. So not just for the individuals themselves in terms of the post-education outcomes, the value of engagement in extracurricular and wider knowledge exchange activities, but also for local economies across the country. So taking maybe a bit of a broader perspective, a lot of the focus when we talk about the role of universities as drivers of economic growth and knowledge exchange is particularly related to how they can generate benefits, for example, through spin-outs activity. You know, there was a recent government review specifically around spin-outs, but it's only one of the ways in which universities can support new businesses and startup businesses. And actually, in terms of the number of businesses and the scale of employment that's supported, graduate startups are actually really important. So the latest data from the Higher Education Business and Community Interaction Survey, bit of a mouthful, estimated that there were over 50,000 employees in student startups in the latest data. So that's businesses started by recent graduates within 2 years of graduation, where there had been some formal business or enterprise support from the HE provider that they were attending. And that's well above the level for formal spin-outs, for example, from universities, which come particularly from staff research. So clearly these are different types of businesses with different growth prospects, but in terms of providing opportunities both directly for new graduates and also the places with significant student populations where those businesses are being started and growing, this can actually be really material for a local area. So when we then think about the underpinning issues we've been discussing related to widening participation and making sure that people from all backgrounds have access to these sorts of opportunities to start up new businesses, or at least to think about it and see it as an option, this seems like an even more important agenda. Jane, Izzy, thank you very much for your time and for your insights into this issue.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
And thanks for listening to Insight for Impact.
You've been listening to Insight for Impact, the podcast from SQW. To learn more about SQW, our people and our latest thinking, please visit our website at sqw.co.uk. And if you have any further feedback or thoughts on the podcast, or would like to suggest a topic for future episodes, please get in touch with us via LinkedIn and Twitter using the handle @SQW.